Hello and welcome to Who Goes There, the biographical game that takes Ralph Waldo Emerson at his word and proves that there is properly no history, only biography. My name's Martin Young, and joining me today are regular team captains Francis Ween and Fred Housego. And on Francis's team is Carol Sala. And teaming up with Fred, we have Rachel Holmes. Our scoring system is deliberately simple because Fred is playing. We'll be giving 2 points for a full and correct answer. That's 2 points, Fred. 1 point for getting halfway there and 1 point for any bonus questions. Now, let's get on with round one. We're going to start with our archive round. We're going to play you some clips of famous and sometimes infamous people, and what you have to do is identify them. Francis, who is worrying about the power of news networks in this clip?
A raised eyebrow, an inflection of the voice, a caustic remark dropped in the middle of a broadcast can raise doubts in a million minds about the veracity of a public official or the wisdom of a government policy. One federal communications commissioner considers the powers of the networks equal to that of local, state, and federal governments all combined. Certainly, it represents a concentration of power over American public opinion unknown in history.
Yeah, well, he got his comeuppance, didn't he? I think it's Spiro Agnew, the vice president under Nixon, who then had to resign in a bit of a hurry when those naughty old news networks that he disliked so much discovered he'd been caught with his finger in the till. And a very famous speech he made in about 1968, I think, attacking the news media. And it included a wonderful line where he attacked the nattering nabobs of negativism.
There was a Bob Hope joke about him as well, because he used to play golf at some convention. He turned around and said, some bad news from Spiro Agnew's household. His library caught fire and both books were badly damaged. And then there was the pause, and if one of them he hadn't finished colouring yet.
Carol, could you tell me, who is standing up for her principles here?
I haven't gone to South Africa. Years ago, I was invited to go down to perform, and I said no. And I'm glad I said no, because as I learned and had enough knowledge about what was going on in the country, I'm glad that I did not. But I know a lot of people went because they offered them so much money. They offered me millions of dollars to come there, but I would never go there.
Carol, who do you think that was?
Black singer. I would
it is a black
guess.
Singer. That's correct.
And we're looking at millions and millions and millions of dollars here, and would it be Diana Ross?
Yes, very good. Rachel, have a listen to this and tell us who it is, if you will.
I'm not sure what the word nerd means anymore. I mean, if it means someone who's antisocial and only cares about computers, I don't think it's properly attached to me now or even then.
This is the king of the Microsoft empire, Bill Gates.
It is. Very good. Well done. It is the multi-billionaire and computer whiz kid, Bill Gates. His Windows programs have made him the richest man in the world, so it really isn't right to call him a nerd. Geek seems much better. Finally, Fred, who is being a shrinking violet here?
If I'm at a party, I'm very shy, and I shy away from people. But the moment I hit that stage, it's a different feeling. I get nerve from somewhere. I don't know what it is. And maybe it's because something I love to do. I think it's something that you like to do. You find nerve from somewhere.
What a terrific voice. Now, who is it?
Someone you gotta do. It sounds like a female version of, like, Sylvester Stallone. Something you gotta do.
Ella Fitzgerald.
Yes, it is. Very good. Finding her nerve there was the late, great jazz singer Ella Fitzgerald. During her long and successful career, she worked with many jazz greats, including Duke Ellington, Count Basie, and Louis Armstrong. Now, some people, such as Mozart, are famous for centuries, while others only manage it for a few minutes. Our next round celebrates those people, and it's called Claim to Fame. What you have to do is tell me what these people are famous for, or give me their names. Francis, can you tell me how a man called Linus has got himself into the history books for being second on the list?
Linus Roach? I don't know. Who?
No, think of somebody enormously important 2,000 years ago. And this guy was the second one of them.
Was he a pope?
Yes! The second pope! Yes! Linus was the second pope. He comes on the list right after St. Peter. Linus is said to have come from Tuscany and became pope around 64 AD. He's recorded as having reigned for 12 years, 4 months, and 12 days. Carol, how did Clifford Irving write his way to infamy?
He was a fakey fraudster sort of person who wrote a biography of Howard Hughes, which was not only unauthorised, but it was untrue as well, and he got into ever so much trouble and went to jail for something.
Absolutely right. Very good. It was a load of pork pies. Absolutely right. He wrote a biography of Howard Hughes. He was supposed to have had loads of interviews with him, but they were all false. Irving was banking on Hughes not coming out of hiding to expose him, which was fine until Howard Hughes phoned up the publishers and said he didn't know who Irving was. Rachel, something classical for you. How did Philippides run into history?
Well, if he's running, it's got to be something to do with a marathon. So it was the first Olympic Games. No.
It was a little bit tougher than that.
Well, they brought the news back to Athens at the Battle of Thermopylae, and all the Greeks went, "Whoa, thank God for that. Give them Persians an hiding, pal, on your bike." And he dropped dead. What an entrance. We won.
Bang.
Never made the party afterwards.
You're quite right. Philippides was the man who's generally credited with running the first marathon after the Athenians defeated the Persians at the Battle of Marathon in 490 BC. Although he ran 26 miles to carry news of the victory back to Athens, he could have taken the more direct road and only run 22 miles.
He was a Greek cab driver, wasn't
he? Now, Fred, it's your question. Jan Kodesh found a fortnight of fame in 1973, but can you tell me how?
Kodesh. About to be Czech or something like that.
Mm-hmm. He was a Czech, you're right. A fortnight of fame, Fred.
Jan Kodesh.
Oh.
Francis.
Well, he was playing at Wimbledon.
Yes.
Wasn't that the Wimbledon where half the players didn't compete, because the professionals all withdrew, and so it was an all-amateur Wimbledon, and he got through to the final.
He won Wimbledon in the year that the Association of Tennis Players banned their members from playing at it. Kodesh was a Czech, as Fred said, who would never usually have been expected to reach the final. But as you said, Francis, I think this is 1 point each here, 79 players went on strike, including 13 of the 16 seeds. The strike-breaking players were led by the bad boy of tennis, Ilya Nastasi. For a bonus point, can you tell me what local government office Ilya Nastasi has held in his native Romania?
Ministry of Silly Walks.
No. I think he's mayor of Bucharest.
Very good. Bonus point there. Well done. And at the end of that round, Fred and Rachel have a very admirable 7, but Francis and Carol are just ahead with 8. Our next round is entitled Jumbled Biographies. I'll read each of you something that could be the biography of one person, but it's actually made up of the details of the lives of three different people. What you have to do is identify the three people. It's tricky, but it makes it easier for you that they all have the same surname. Francis. This person was a leading swing saxophonist who found fame for his sports cartoons in the Daily Mail and tried to standardize American spelling in his American Dictionary of the English Language. What are these people?
The American Dictionary would be Webster's Dictionary, Noah Webster.
Yes.
And the sports cartoonist, I think, was called Jack Webster, wasn't he, or something? No, he obviously wasn't.
Tom Webster.
Oh, why, what's...
The swing saxophonist?
Yes.
Ben Webster.
Ben Webster. Point each. Well done. Carol, see if you can untangle these mixed-up people. This person galloped to fame as a chef, and he was a physicist who discovered a magneto-optic effect of light, which bears his name, and got 6 Academy Award nominations, one for famously rolling in the surf.
Okay, well, it's got to be Kerr, Graham.
Yes.
Kerr being the first one, so once we've got one of those, we can play with the rest, can't we? Rolling in the from here to eternity, and Bert and Deborah Kerr. There we are.
Yes,
we are. Right.
Or Deborah Carr, which is just to confuse you.
Oh, yeah, you pronounce it
that's right,
way,
but it is Kerr.
Well, that's American.
It is Kerr. So who was the physicist?
I'll behave. It's somebody Kerr, isn't it?
It's somebody
so it's
Kerr.
Going to be
yeah. Fred Kerr.
John. There we are.
It is John Kerr, actually. It was John Kerr.
Magneto optics. I shall go study, sir. I shall go study.
Oh, excellent. Very well done. The full 2 points there. Okay, Rachel, your turn now. And let's see what you make out of this biography. This former All-Ireland juvenile middleweight boxing champion moved to England to present What's My Line, then found fame for playing prim characters in films, but made a triumphant return to Broadway in 1995 playing a cross-dresser. And all three of them had a massive hit with Bing Crosby and Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy. So who are they? Who do you think the cross-dresser was?
Well, I think it's Julie Andrews.
Yes! Absolutely right.
There was,
well done.
There was a film made out of it as well, Victor Victoria.
Okay.
The now, boxer.
Fred can help you with that.
Yeah. Eamon, dear old Eamon Andrews, with a nervous giggle. And then we had the Andrews sisters. With
yes. Well done.
Who paid Reveille, yes.
They're all Andrews. Eamon Andrews presented What's My Line and later This Is Your Life. Julie Andrews won the Academy Award for Best Actress for Mary Poppins. And then she had her cross-dressing role, as you properly said, Rachel, of Victor Victoria. And the Andrews sisters had hits with Crosby and others. For a bonus point, can you tell me the names of the three Andrews sisters?
Patsy Laverne and Maxine.
Oh. 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 Now we know what Francis listened to under the blankets at night.
Still do.
Finally, Fred, here are your entwined life histories. A successful soldier in the American Revolutionary Army, he became president of New Hampshire and the host of the TV variety show Talk of the Town, which later took his name. But his most lasting fame is for his 14 comic operas, which he wrote with someone else.
Is it Gilbert and Sullivan?
Yes.
So I'm just trying to think of the American Revolutionary General. Pakenham, obviously Washington, Light Horse Harry Lee. None of those figure much as either a Sullivan or a Gilbert.
There was a Sullivan.
It's the Ed Sullivan Show. We got
yes,
that. I mean,
yeah, yes.
But I'm just trying to think of this successful American War of Independence soldier.
Well, the name John Sullivan sprung to my mind.
Could have put in the box of John L. Sullivan. Would have been happier.
Carol would have got that. John. She'd have said John and she'd have got it. I think there's definitely 1.5 points there, Fred. Well done. Very good. Throughout history, some people have striven hard to find fame only to hide from it behind a pseudonym. This round is all about those people and it's entitled AKA, though occasionally we call it Clarissa. The first question to you, Francis. Why might Laszlo Löwenstein give you the creeps?
Well, it was obviously the real name, or the original name, of a horror actor. So one has to think, you know, Peter Cushing or Christopher Lee. So we'll say Christopher Lee? No.
Nope.
Is it
Peter
Vincent
Cushing?
Price?
Nope.
Vincent. Oh.
Peter was giving
Peter
me
Lorre.
Peter Lorre. Very good. 1 point there. It is the googly-eyed actor Peter Lorre. He was born in Hungary and used his foreign accent and strange looks to great effect in over 50 films. Graham Greene once described Lorre's looks in this way. Those marbly pupils in the pasty spherical face are like the eyepieces of a microscope through which you can see laid flat on the slide the entangled mind of man.
Kirk Douglas had a good line about him in 20,000 Leagues Beneath the Sea when he says, "Stop looking at me with those hard-boiled eggs."
Carol, how is Chorios Panayotou better known to pop pickers worldwide?
Spell it, the first one.
All right.
That's it, time out.
Chorios is actually written Georgios, which would be a lot easier. And Panayotou.
Oh, all right, yeah. You see, you're showing off, but it's George Michael. And if you'd said ja instead of right.
You're right.
That's who it is.
Absolutely right. It is George Michael. He started with Andrew Ridgeley in Wham, but went on to a successful solo career. He famously claimed that he was a slave to his recording company, Sony, even though he had an estimated fortune of £7 million. Rachel, if you were out to lunch with Lucille Lesueur and Billy Cassin, who would you be with?
Out to lunch.
Yeah, not in the sense of totally off one's tree. The book Mummy Dearest is a
Lucille Ball. No?
Nope. But you're in the right sort of bit before that.
Joan Crawford. Oh, and if I was having lunch, it might be a rat in a tureen.
Yes.
It's Joan Crawford.
It is. Very good. I need to know more about the rat in the tureen.
Joan Crawford and Bette Davis.
It was a budgerigar, wasn't it? Didn't she cook the budgerigar?
Obviously rather unpleasant.
The trouble is, you've got to have very small hands to find the wishbone.
Well done. It is the screen legend Joan Crawford. Her film career spanned 45 years and she won an Academy Award for the film Mildred Pierce. She once gave these words of wisdom to an upcoming starlet. The most important thing a woman can have, next to her talent, of course, is her hairdresser. Finally, Fred, why might you find the company of Richard Saunders shocking? We're back into American history.
Shocking.
It's a pseudonym for one.
Well, it's not Ben Franklin, is it?
Yes.
Yes, and the old experiments with the key on the kite to show out lightning conductors.
Well done. Richard Saunders is the pseudonym of Benjamin Franklin. He was a true Renaissance man, a newspaper proprietor, an inventor, the man who discovered that lightning and electricity were one and the same, a diplomat and a statesman. Now, for a bonus point, can any of you tell me how he made people see things more clearly?
He was an optician, wasn't he, as well? Did he do that? Make optical glasses and things?
Mm-hmm. He invented something rather special in spectacles. You're right.
Bifocals, wasn't it?
Bifocals. Yeah, right, yeah. Very good. Bonus point there, Fred. Now we come to our autobiography round. I'll read our panellists a quote from a well-known personality talking about themselves, and all our teams have to do is tell me who that is. Francis, who is justifying his wanderlust here? A man of ordinary talent will always be ordinary, whether he travels or not. But a man of superior talent, which I cannot deny myself to be without being impious, will go to pieces if he remains forever in the same place.
Well, there's a faint whiff of Oscar Wilde about it.
There is, but it's well before that.
But it's well before that, is it? We'll go to pieces. Oh, well, that could well be another much-travelled man, Lord Byron, perhaps.
That's an equally good idea, but you have to go further back. And it's not somebody that you really associate with travelling. He only lived a very short time.
So he never travelled at all, in fact?
Well, he may have rushed around a lot in the few years before that. On hearing of this person's death, Haydn said, the world will not have such a talent again in 100 years. So we're well before the people you've mentioned.
Not Mozart, is it? Because he was over here at the age of 9, didn't he? Stayed in Belgravia, Mozart.
Did you drive him there at all, Fred?
Kind of got half a chance, yeah. He lived in Ebrus.
I can't afford to pay you, Governor, but here's a manuscript.
Yeah.
Yes, very good. Well done, Fred. From the sublime to the ridiculous, I'm afraid, for you, Carol. Who is describing their accuracy here? I don't make mistakes. I make prophecies which immediately go wrong.
I bet it's not Michael Fish, but it damn well ought to be.
It ought to be Michael Fish.
Yes, and it's not, is it?
No, but no. I'm going to give you a really good clue, because I want to read this out so much.
Okay.
He once said, the lead car is absolutely unique, except for the one behind it, which is identical.
Yes, the man of Channel 4, Murray Walker.
That's right, yeah. Very good. The wonderful Murray Walker. He's a legend of commentating with a motor mouth to match the cars he's talking about. Clive James once described him thus, in his quieter moments, he sounds as if his trousers are on fire. Rachel, here's another person describing their accuracy, but who is it? I think and think for months and years. 99 times the conclusion is false. The 100th time, I am right.
Einstein.
Yes! Oh, very good. Actually, Einstein himself, who of course was such a genius, could describe his theories in simple terms like this. When you sit with a pretty girl for 2 hours, you think it's only a minute. But when you sit on a hot stove for a minute, you think it's 2 hours. That's relativity. Finally, Fred, who is describing his gait here? I mean, G-A-I-T. People think I have an interesting walk. Hell, I'm just trying to hold my gut in. It's an American Western actor.
Oh, well.
Gary Cooper?
Nope. It's Robert Mitchum.
Oh. He knows that.
We are.
Of course it is.
Throughout his life, he was self-deprecating. He once said, young actors love me. They think if that big slob can make it, there's a chance for us. A nice quote from him too. He said, when he was asked how he kept fit, he replied, I lay down a lot. And at the end of that round, let's have a quick look at the scores. Francis and Carol have 17, and Fred and Rachel have a stunning 19.5. Now, a musical round. We'll play you some pieces of music, and all you need to do is tell me the subject of the piece of music or the person to whom it's dedicated. Francis, here's a bit of calypso for you.
Regardless of criticism, no one could have stopped him. Marrying his mind was firmly made up. All he really needed in life is a loyal, sincere, and loving wife. All how the critics tried to break down his plan, his real choice was the American. Though he is born, don't give him bad name. Wish him the best, and long may he reign.
Francis, any ideas?
Does it go on to a chorus about those two little friends of mine, Ramadan and Valentine?
I don't think so. I'm not sure. But no, that was the Lord Invader. And for whose marriage did he write that
calypso? Oh, he wrote marriage. I thought it was one of those cricketing calypsos celebrating West Indian victories. Been rather lost them. well, it must be Charles and Diana.
Nope. You have to go back a bit further.
Elizabeth and Philip, perhaps.
Just a few years after Elizabeth. And it was celebrating a marriage.
Snowden?
You're in the wrong country.
Oh.
All right, a clue. Oh. 1956. She was a huge star.
Oh, Grace Kelly.
Grace Kelly and...
Prince Rainier.
Yes, yes. Fine, I think that's about 1 point. And now, for Carol, it's from calypso to reggae. Listen to this and try to tell me who it's about.
I'm on the rock.
Iron like a lion in Zion.
Is it Haile Selassie?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, he wasn't singing.
Oh, well, no, but please don't ask me to tell you who was singing. I feel worn out enough Bob. Having to answer the question. Bob. Please tell me that's right.
Bob Marley's.
Bob Marley and the Wailers.
Yes. Yeah. Very good. Well done. It was by Bob Marley and the Wailers, and it celebrates the life of Haile Selassie, the former emperor of Ethiopia. Rachel, have a listen to this. That very moving piece was composed by John Williams for a film about the work of an industrialist. Can you tell me the name of the film?
The work of an industrialist.
You were probably too busy watching the ghastly images of the film to remember the music, although it did, in fact, win an Academy Award.
Schindler's List, is it?
Schindler's List. Well done, Fred. It was the theme to Schindler's List. Oscar Schindler was the Czech-born entrepreneur who smuggled Jews out of Poland during the Second World War. The film won 7 Academy Awards, and as I said, it included 1 for that score. Mm. Fred, it's your turn now. Listen to this. Well, that was Crossroads, played by Cream with Eric Clapton on lead guitar. But the question is, Fred, which great blues singer is that song about?
This is the story about the man who went to the crossroads and sold his soul to the devil so that he could play brilliantly. Johnson?
Yes.
Yeah, not Lonnie Johnson. Robert
it's
Johnson.
Robert Johnson, correct. Excellent. Well done. Our final round is called Don't Give Up the Day Job. The famous and infamous often have a parallel career to the one for which they gain fame and fortune. What our panelists have to do is identify some well-known figures from their second jobs. Francis, let's start with you. This man was the racing tipster for the Glasgow Herald, even though he was well-known nationally for something very different. It's only since going international that he's given up tipping on the turf. Who is it?
It's the eminent Foreign Secretary, Robin Cook.
It is.
He did a weekly column in the Glasgow Herald telling you the horses to back, and then he would nip off and bomb Iraq in his spare time.
And now that he's now that he's gone off to be that old Foreign Secretary thing, who's taken over?
It's another politician.
Yes.
And I'd say it's Alex Salmond, the leader of the SNP.
Very good. Carol, this Yorkshire secretary went from earning £3 a week to £1 a word. But who is it? Earning £3 a week.
I don't want to increase the North-South divide any further, but it seems to me whenever it's a woman and it's Yorkshire, it's always Barbara Taylor Bradford.
It is Barbara Taylor Bradford. Very good. Rachel, our next person has done a reversal. After a successful career in the spotlight, she's turned away from it to become a psychoanalyst. Do you know who that might be?
Someone who's been on the stage.
On television particularly. I think we might have an idea here.
I've got an idea. It's Pamela Stevenson.
It is Pamela Stevenson. Oh. Well done. She was, of course, the star of Not the 9 o'clock News. She married Billy Connolly and she gave up doing impersonations to practice psychology in America. Finally, Fred. This man has been a swimming pool salesman, a stuntman, and a circus escapologist before reinventing himself.
Not the wind-up radio man, is it? And I can't remember his name. He's the guy who does this clockwork radio.
Yeah.
No.
Trevor Bayliss, the inventor of the clockwork radio. Before he turned his hand to inventing, you might have been able to catch him with the Berlin Circus doing an underwater escapology act as Ramesses II. But then, don't we all? That brings us to the end of the show. A look at the scores tell me that Fred and Rachel have a very creditable 24.5, but Francis and Carol have 27 points. Well done. That just leaves me to thank our panellists, Francis Wien, Carol Sala, Rachel Holmes, and Fred Housegoe. Who Goes There was written by Nick Hildred and Hugh Rycroft, and it was produced by Liz Anstey. From me, Martin Young, and all of us here at the BBC Radio Theatre, goodbye.